Good morning. You've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. I'm Jack Peterson. It is Friday, June 5th, and here in the studio with me is Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. It's a beautiful morning.
It is. Yeah, we got another nice, lovely morning out there.
Yeah, getting a lot of those. June is looking really nice. Very green. Very flowery, too.
Yeah, it is, actually. I think this rain is helping keep things, it's bursting. And joining us on the telephone this morning is Zach Hagedone, calling from the comfort of his own home, where he is still recuperating from foot surgery. Zach is the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader. Good morning, Zach. Can you hear
us? Good morning.
Oh, there he is.
Good morning. I can hear you fine.
Yep, you're coming through loud and clear. All right, and we'll be talking with Zach about some important local and state politics matters in just a few minutes. Let's talk about the news in general here. And you mentioned it's a beautiful day. Summer's coming right along, and the Lake Ponderay is currently coming up to its summer pool. It is at 2,060 and a half feet at Hope, as observed by the Army Corps of Engineers, 2 feet shy of its full summer pool. So that is projected to keep going up at about the same rate and get up to full pool. It looks like at least on schedule by the end of June, I think. In statewide news, our Idaho State Senate candidate Scott Herndon, he's the Republican nominee from Legislative District 1, has filed a complaint against the campaign of the state's chief election official, that is Secretary of State Phil McGrane, for mailers sent ahead of the May primary that endorsed his opponent, Herndon's opponent, that is, Jim Woodward. The mailers in question feature Idaho Secretary of State Phil McGrane on one side and an endorsement for incumbent Senator Jim Woodward on the opposite side of the mailer. Herndon defeated Woodward in the race in May, and the suit, according to Herndon, is over the matter of this mailing should have cost more than, he alleges that it would have cost more than $1,000 to send out these mailers, which under campaign finance laws would trigger a required expense report within 48 hours. McGrane says that the mailings were carefully planned out to come in under $1,000. He apparently mailed these all over the state and endorsed 26 different incumbent legislators, dividing up those mailers, so it came to about a $750 in-kind donation from his campaign to theirs, which would not trigger that expense report. And there's more to be said about that, but the lawsuit will go to the Secretary of, or not to the Secretary of State, the lawsuit will go to the Attorney General's office, because the Secretary of State is involved in the question. More on the activities of Mr. Herndon later on in just a moment. But here in Sandpoint, as we reported last week, the City Council voted unanimously to adopt new fees, which include maximums for the city's paid parking program. The parking fee maximums are $3 an hour for non-permit holders in all city-owned lots and up to $5 an hour for overstaying in the two-hour street parking zones. City residents can purchase a permit for the city lots for $20 a year, and Bonner County residents will pay $40 a year, double that amount. But they go on sale on June 8th, and they will go into effect beginning the 1st of July.
Jack?
Yes?
I thought I saw it was $35 for county residents.
Why, right, sir? Yeah. Why, yeah. Sir? You did. Okay. You are correct.
We'll save them $5 right there.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. It says right here, the city of Sandpoint Will cost $20 for residents and $35 for Bonner County residents. There's the list, of course, is available online of where these parking permits will take effect. It goes into effect on July 1st, so you'll have about 3 weeks or so to get your permit before the laws take place.
But there's still a lot of free parking. You still get two hours of free parking on the street.
Yeah.
Those permits are probably most helpful if you're going to be parking for more than that on the street, or if you want to park in the city parking lots.
Let's see. The city launched a survey this week. Speaking of city actions, the city of Sandpoint launched a survey on Wednesday seeking input from residents on a potential local option tax that would be voted on in the fall. Resort cities in Idaho with fewer than 10,000 residents have an option of adopting local option taxes for specific purposes. And the city is now seeking the public's answer to the question, quote, if Sandpoint has an opportunity to make long-term investments in its infrastructure and community assets, what should those investments be? As phrased by Mayor Jeremy Grimm in a recent editorial that appeared in The Reader, as well as the Bonner County Daily Bee, and on the city's website. There's links, there's QR code links in the papers, and you can also go directly to the survey by going to sandpointidaho.gov/lot. That's L-O-T, as in local option tax, sandpointidaho.gov/LOT. And in local politics news, the Bonner County Republican Central Committee has declared the precinct of Clark Fork precinct seat vacant. This was after a lengthy meeting last Friday night at the VFW Hall in Sandpoint. This is what we hope to talk to Mr. Hagedone about. So I'm not going to necessarily get into all the details right this second. But the results, this is kind of our top story last week, was that the challenge had been filed. And after the meeting on Friday, it is official that the Bonner County Republican Central Committee has declared the seat vacant. This is not necessarily the end of the story, as Heisel, I believe, has retained counsel and is considering filing a lawsuit to regain the seat. Let's see. There's a story in your paper, Zach, written by Ben Olson about Lake Pondere High School, which is talking about the as the final years of Lake Pondere High School in that location. This is the final year for the teen living class. And there's also a piece in Idaho Ed News about the growing, as they say, kind of public outcry against the moving of the building. As far as I know, I haven't heard of any plans to not move, they're not moving the building, obviously, but they will be moving the school, the students in it, to a different location, and the building will for now not be used as a school. It'll still be retained as property by the school district, but won't be in use as Lake Pondere High School. That news story is ongoing, but I guess my point in mentioning it is just that the news, it's not settling down, this opposition to the moving of Lake Pondere High School, and we'll see what develops as time goes on.
Yeah, yeah. And to clarify, the kids will be going to school there again next year at the Lake Pondere High School.
Yeah.
They would move to the new campus, which would be located basically behind the middle school the following year.
That's right. And I think it's certain electives that is like this is the final year for, as I said, the teen living class and the electives that are held at Lake Pontarie High School will be moving to the high school.
Yeah, and actually, mm-hmm. One of the stated reasons for doing that is because the students from the Lake Pontarie Alternative School would have better access to a lot of the CTE classes that will be happening at the high school with the opening of the new CTE center there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pretty fraught situation because the kids that have gone to school there felt like that school, the building and the location gave them a much stronger sense of community. But the district is pointing out that the enrollment at the Lake Pontarie Alternative High School has dropped quite a bit mm-hmm. in the last several years. I think it's down to, I don't know if Zach, if you have numbers on that. I think I saw 49 kids now in that program. But anyways, I think we'll see more about that during the course of this year.
Mm-hmm. In some state politics news, Idaho Republican Party Chair Dorothy Moon has officially announced her candidacy for a third term as chair of the Idaho Republican Party. There will be a vote at the Idaho State GOP State Convention, which is in Meridian, June 18th through 20th. That is where delegates from across Idaho will gather to conduct party business and elect party leadership, and Moon will be seeking a third term. I think we can talk local politics here if we want to. This rather dramatic meeting on Friday night. I can say I can't do that much firsthand reporting, but I can say that the meeting was just breaking up at, I think, like about 11:30 or something. There were still people there at the VFW, just filing out at about that time on Friday night for a meeting that went, according to an editorial by Dave Britton, I think the executive session went for more than an hour. And the meeting was particularly contentious and particularly well attended because this was the first meeting after the primary election, and they were voting on a residency challenge against Clark Fork committeeman-elect, I guess, Jensen Heisel, who has not been seated. The County Central Committee voted to declare the seat vacant from Clark Fork. Zach, I guess let's get into it. The challenge was a challenge officially filed by Scott Herndon. Is that correct? He made.
Mm-hmm. I would love to get into it, but I got to tell you, I'm hearing like some Leonard Cohen music in the background. And I can't really hear what you're saying.
Oh, no. Oh, I know. Oh,
I think you've been playing hold music on me the whole time.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks, Zach. Can you hear
me? Okay, now I can hear you perfectly.
Can you hear me perfectly?
There, but okay. I didn't want to interrupt. But,
oh, thanks.
I was enjoying the Leonard Cohen. But
oh, that's good. Yeah, so long.
It's kind of hard to make that out.
Yeah, okay.
Great.
Thanks for listening. We're talking now about the Bonner County
Jensen.
Yeah, Jensen Heisel, who was elected by about more than 54% to serve as a Republican Central Committee precinct committeeman for Clark Fork on the May 19th primary. He defeated the incumbent committeeman Dmitry Borisov. But the challenge was filed, I believe, by Scott Herndon, the state Senate nominee, who has been a leading figure in the Bonner County Republican Central Committee, although he is not currently its chairman.
No, he had to stand down as chairman so he could run for Senate, and now that he's won the primary nomination for the local Republican Party, they had to get a new chairperson for the BCRCC, and that's now Roger Rudd,
mm-hmm.
who won the primary for county clerk.
Right.
So Roger Rudd's now the chair of the BCRCC. And I believe Roger Rudd will be
unopposed in the general election as well.
Right.
Yeah, so he's pretty much a lock there.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And so that meeting, I mean, part of the reason why that meeting went so long is that in addition to taking up this residency challenge against Jensen Heisel, it was also their reorganization meeting. So they had to elect all new officers and delegates to the convention. I think you might have mentioned that already. But really, the big fireworks were about Jensen Heisel's status as a resident of the Clarkport precinct. And really, what the whole issue boiled down to was that Herndon had apparently done a lot of sleuthing work to figure out that Heisel had registered to vote using an address where he doesn't actually live. It's property that he owns and had lived there, but it's not where he has his primary residence now, although his primary residence now is sort of in flux as he and his wife are in the process of purchasing some property and buying and building a home also in Clarkport. So he's been kind of bouncing around, like at his parents' house. He's got a mailing address out at his mother-in-law's house because he's filed with Secretary of State for like business licensing things, for DMV things. So he's in a kind of a liminal space, I guess, with where he's living at the moment. But it's, with the exception of that address at his mother-in-law's place, it's all still within the Clarkport precinct. It just doesn't line up exactly with what he filed for his voter registration and his candidacy application. Mm-hmm. So that discrepancy, triggered Scott Herndon into filing multiple pages worth of complaint to, first to Bonner County Clerk Mike Rosedale, with all these exhibits and property tax filings and, images of Facebook posts and all this stuff. It was a proper, court case style complaint. And the argument being, you can't, be seated as a elected official for the Bonner County Republican Central Committee if you're not a resident of the precinct, for 6 months prior to the election, and you have to, have your voter registration match where you live. So those were kind of the two main arguments that Herndon presented. Now for Jensen Heisel's part, his argument is like, okay, yeah, fine. I'm in flux right now. I've lived in this precinct for my entire life. I definitely lived there for 6 months prior to the election, but maybe look past the sort of the paperwork technicality and realize, that I am a resident of this precinct. I always have been. And the will of the voters put me in that position. So he sees it sort of like as a kind of a political move, right, to remove a person when, over the will of the voters. Whereas Herndon, as he often does, is really good about, finding the fine letter of the law and, just like really hammering in on these slivers of distinction in the code. And that's what the BCRCC voted, to unseat him. And I guess they're just going to have to, appoint somebody at some point or identify someone to take that seat. I would guess it's going to be Dmitry Borisov. But we don't know when that's going to happen or if Jensen's going to challenge it. To my understanding, the only way he can challenge that is in district court. So, that's going to entail, a whole legal proceeding and all that. So it's unclear, and, he doesn't want to necessarily say anything at this point about what he might do. But that would be the only sort of avenue.
Yeah.
And I spoke with the Idaho Secretary of State's office, and that's what I got from them, too, is that he would need to file a lawsuit. And then it would go up the chain, to a certain point where it would get dealt with in the courts, and then potentially the Secretary of State's office could get involved. But yeah, that's kind of where it stands now. It was the main argument is like the technicality of the law versus the reality of the real world. I think if you wanted to really simplify the two sides of the argument here.
Yeah, the Secretary of State. I mean, your quote in the Reader is just, long story short, this is all handled locally at the central committee level.
Right.
Is that, to make it, I guess, long story, not quite as short, does that just mean there is no, the Secretary of State intends to take no action here? It's going to be
As far as I understand, and this is kind of that's an interesting part of this whole thing, and I think it speaks to a deeper issue, is how broad the powers are that central committees have in Idaho statute. And this has come up a couple times in the past in different contexts and in different places around the state, is that the way Idaho statute is written, you know, a political party, like the Republicans or Democrats, is a private club, essentially. Like they're a private organization. And as a private organization, they have their own bylaws, they have their own, you know, rules and regulations, and the state really doesn't enter into any of that. Like telling them how to run their own circus, you know. But at the same time, they have this sort of quasi-governmental status where they do elect people, and they do elect them in public elections, which are paid for by the public, regardless of their party. I mean, all of our tax dollars go into the same pot, you know, that funds election infrastructure. So even though these are people being elected to a private organization, they're still being elected on a sort of civic platform that is publicly funded. And so the state's in a weird position. And I think that there are some people in the higher levels of the state government, they're also kind of frustrated with this, where they're footing the bill for these sort of private groups to do their things in a quasi-public election style. And so we have this impulse, you know, as Americans to be like public accountability for public elections, but it's not entirely public, you know, if you get what I mean. It's like there's this weird kind of gray area between, is this actually a private election or is it a public election? Like, as do all taxpayers have a right to weigh in on this or not? And of course, the Scott Herndon side of things would say this is an entirely private organization. We can do whatever we want, you know, within our own system, and you know, you can't really tell us what to do. And that's where the Secretary of State's office is like, well, I mean, this all happens at the Central Committee level. We can't do anything about it. And even the county clerk was like, that's not our job either. I mean, the job of the county clerk is to canvass elections and, you know, run the elections fairly and equally for everyone. So they don't really have any authority to jump into the Central Committee and be like, this isn't fair, you didn't adjudicate this properly, whatever. So there really is not a whole lot of accountability, ultimately, over Central Committee actions, other than inside their own structures.
Potentially there could be a lawsuit and the judicial branch of government could weigh in on this.
Right.
Yeah.
The state party could too. I mean, the Idaho State Republican Party could weigh in on these things.
Would they have any authority, the state party over the county?
The only times I've ever seen a central committee get sort of slapped on the wrist for anything was from the state party. Not from the actual like state of Idaho or any kind of state government agency. It was you know, the Idaho GOP.
Yeah.
You guys broke our bigger like state party bylaws by doing something.
So Heisel lives within the precinct, and the way that Herndon is attacking it is that he didn't live at the specific address within the precinct.
Right. And he can't prove that he lived at a specific address 6 months prior. And Jensen's argument is that in the real world, in reality, yes, I've been living in this precinct my whole life.
I just wonder, is there any provision that they could just, that the BRCC could say, well, okay, you know, in the interest of being fair here, let's correct that, the record on where you live within the precinct, and vote again.
Conceivably, yeah. I mean, I'm not privy to all the ins and outs of their internal bylaws and things, but just based on what I've seen and sort of the impunity they have to manage themselves as they will, feels like they could do a number of things to cure this. I mean, he won the election, and he voted, he won. They gave him a certificate that he won, like at the meeting when they unseated him. They roll called him in to the meeting at which he was like kicked out. So a lot of sort of the ceremonial and kind of ministerial things that occur when someone wins an election happened for him. And it was only in this executive session, which, you know, we're not privy to what they talked about, that they decided that he would be vacated and unseated.
We can't see what they talked about, and we can't know how close the vote was either.
We can't.
All the deliberations of the executive session will remain confidential, as the new county party chair, Roger Rudd, announced. Just for background, I'm sure many of our listeners know, this takes place in a larger context where Jensen Heisel was one of a number of candidates across the county who were seeking election to the Bonner County Republican Central Committee, opposing incumbent candidates who were, I guess, are perceived or actually are, Heisel was not endorsed by the County Central Committee in their mailer that went out before the election. His opponent was. Yeah. An insurgency of more or less moderate Republicans running against the harder, the more hardened right wing dominant faction within the Republican Central Committee here in Bonner County.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, we've alluded to this sort of dynamic dozens of times over the past couple of years on the show here.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there are two essentially big sort of internal conflicts going on. It's between the sort of Dorothy Moon right wing side of things, and then this moderate, like, bring the party back toward the center a little bit more, stop with a lot of the culture war things, you know, stuff like that. And we saw that manifest in the past primary with the precinct committee races. And Jensen Heisel was definitely one of those people that was. It was brought in by others in the precincts, and, like, you know, we need younger people. We need people who aren't going to, like, you know, get in line with kind of the Herndon style of politics. And so I'm not surprised that Herndon would have gone after him so vigorously, you know, with such a voluminous complaint and doing so much research on his own to present to, you know, to the county clerk and then to take this, you know, pretty dramatic step of unseating him. I mean, I feel like, and this might be just me speculating, but, you know, we love when I do that, that if this had been a different candidate, if this had been a candidate who, you know, was supported perhaps by that sort of Herndon majority, they would never have even brought this up. I mean, you think about, I mean, you have to go looking for this.
Yeah. And I think that's probably a pretty good guess there, Zach.
Yeah, so. And you have to wonder, like, how often this actually happens in this county or any county. Mm-hmm. Somebody is in between moves or something, and they've got to go make a vote, and they just use their previous voter registration. You know, they're still living in the same place. They're still voting in the same precinct. They're just moving a couple of blocks away, you know, mm-hmm. or a mile away or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they might be using their mom or dad's house as their mailing address while they're between places.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know this, but my spider sense tells me that this is probably not the only instance of this across our entire county or district. Mm-hmm. But because of those internal sort of political conflicts and the feeling, you know, among the part of people like Scott Herndon that, you know, they need to weed out every single person they possibly can, who might be slightly opposed to their view on how the committee should run and how the party should run, led to why this was such a big deal.
Mm-hmm. I guess we'll see how it plays out, and if Mr. Heisel decides to actually take it to court. And that's the only remedy at this point, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he could take it to court for sure. The other possibility, and this is kind of the nuclear option, I guess, on the part of Herndon et al., is that, you know, throughout the complaint, there are certain references here and there to, like, you know, Mr. Heisel committed fraud, you know, some kind of election integrity violations, you know, maliciously sending false information to a sworn officer and stuff like that. And those allegations, some criminal charges.
Mm-hmm.
So on the other end of it, you know, Jensen Heisel could challenge it in court himself and say this isn't fair. But on the other hand, you know, the complaint, like Herndon, et cetera, could also file their own further legal action saying this guy broke the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that would also kick it in court.
Mm-hmm.
So it could go those two ways, or it could just go away entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of money would be spent if it gets into court on either of those scenarios.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, on either end of that spectrum, yeah, we'd all be paying some money.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Jensen's point as well is like, this isn't just about this one election. I think that was one of the quotes that I pulled in my piece. It's like, this isn't just about one election. It's about whether or not, you know, these voters are going to be respected or their will is going to be overturned with political games, which is, I think, how we referred to it.
Yeah.
No, Herndon would strenuously object to that characterization because, you know, he's such a stickler for, you know, the minutiae of Idaho code. So this isn't political games. This is just upholding Idaho statute and, you know, having respect for election integrity, et cetera. Mm-hmm. That would be his argument, I would imagine.
Yeah. He, Mr. Herndon, also has filed a lawsuit against the Secretary of State. As I mm-hmm. mentioned at the beginning of the show there. So, challenging a mailer that went out to select Bonner County voters ahead of the May 19th primary.
Upset that the Secretary of State, the incumbent Secretary of State, and, you know, mm-hmm. also running in the primary, would file endorsements and make public endorsements ahead of that election. I think is the crux of what Herndon's argument here is that, you know, the Secretary of State's office should remain completely politically neutral. Doesn't matter if they're running for office or not, inappropriate use of money, et cetera.
Yeah.
The irony, of course, being that, you know, he as the former chair yeah. of the BCRCC.
Rather large irony.
made a lot of endorsements.
Yeah.
You know, he technically had stepped down, mm-hmm. you know, at the time of the filing or whatever of distribution of those mailers, the official voter's guide that went out that caused such a ruckus prior to the primary. But, you know, he's still a member of the center committee, and it's not like he didn't have a say in it. So, mm-hmm. so his own party, his own organization made a lot of recommendations and endorsements prior to the primary. So it is kind of rich that there would be now a lawsuit alleging that Phil McGrane, our Secretary of State, somehow was breaking the law by doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But in the story from the Capital Sun that we're referring to, I mean, Phil McGrane said he welcomes the lawsuit.
Yeah. And he's sticking up for the fact that his endorsements were made on his part as a political candidate, mm-hmm. not as an officer.
Right. Well,
so,
and it's political speech. It's First Amendment, right? I mean, you can do
yeah.
that.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, here in Bonner County, our own the outgoing county clerk Mike Rosedale made certain endorsements as well, including of the
guy who won the
guy exactly of Roger Rudd, yeah, who won the primary.
We're about out of time, guys.
Yep, here it is. We come to the end. Go. What were you going to say there, Zach? I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say real quick that I can imagine that part of the reason why Secretary of State Phil McGrane welcomes the lawsuit is because these points can be brought up in a court of law to show that, you know, that the central committee here in Bonner County issued endorsements for candidates who were on the central committee who were also running in the primary, who had a hand in crafting those things, and also that our county clerk made endorsements.
Yeah.
Although he wasn't running. But so I look forward to the lawsuit as well to kind of see how these fine points get parsed.
Yeah, it's ultimately, I think the lawsuit is a matter. I mean, what's going to be determined in the court is more or less how much money was spent and would it have ought it to have required an expenditure report to be be issued, and it won't really determine whether the legal findings won't determine whether or not the Secretary of State is allowed to endorse candidates.
Yeah. The question being, does it fall under the contribution limit
yeah.
For those candidates he endorsed?
Yeah.
But Guys, we got to. I did want to ask Jack, is there anything happening this weekend?
Hey, look at this. Right here on page number, page of the reader, there is a big event coming up this Saturday. Why, that's tomorrow. From 2 to 6 p.m., this radio station, 88.5 KRFY, is taking over Matchwood Brewing. So for a lovely Saturday afternoon at the brewery. This is open to all ages. You do not have to be the type of person who drinks beer to join us at the brewery. In fact, we hope, weather permitting, to be outside in the yard for a social occasion on a Saturday afternoon. Music provided by RFB, Sandpoint's funkiest band, and cake provided by the Cakery on First, our downstairs neighbor here at the radio station, soon to open on June 20th, and actually our newest underwriter at 88.5 KRFY. Although I'm not sure if I was supposed to say that or not, but it's out there now. It's broadcast. The party should be good. We've got a lot of familiar voices coming to join us, and we will be broadcasting live from Matchwood Brewing throughout the day. It'll be our usual music mix, but we'll be breaking in to bring you updates from the party and hopefully bringing some people who were there way back when, 15 years ago and further into the past when KRFY was just an idea, to talk about what community radio means to them and why they did it.
Yeah,
that's right. And we'll see how happy they are to see it still going 15 years later. Big party Saturday afternoon. That's tomorrow afternoon, 2 to 6 p.m. You don't have to stay for the whole time. Just come on by and say hello. We'd love to see anybody. And I will mention also that Matchwood Brewing has been generous enough to brew us some cans of beer that the proceeds of which will go to KRFY 88.5, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. Yeah. Well, there you go. Zach, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Hope you get some healing in there.
Yeah.
Well, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling good enough to hobble down to Matchwood.
There we go.
Hey, perfect. All right.
I'll see you there.
Okay. We'll have a beer for you.
Yes. Thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
We'll see you there. Tomorrow.
Okay, take
care. Okay, see ya. Bye. Thanks, Chris. Good show as always. Yeah. And we're signing off now, off to Otto's Eclectic Mix, and enjoy your day of what looks like sunny weather, if the light coming through the skylight can be trusted. Here's Andrea Bocelli. Ooh.